moving all fire departments to volunteers, improving your intubation success rates, risks for older asthma patients, and we'll look at another EMS 10 Innovator awardee with Chief Wayne Zigowitz and his initiative to improve awareness for our EMS brethren at risk for suicide. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of The Medic Cast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is The Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up! Here's today's show with the pod medic, Jamie Davis!
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Medic Cast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome all of you to this week's show. We have a great show with this week's EMS news items coming up first, looking at one city's initiative to get more funding for their EMS departments by getting rid of paid fire departments and moving them to volunteer status. Now, I know that's going to rile up some fire departments out there, but I think it makes some sense. Then in this week's tip segment from EMS Today 2015, I have another EMS 10 innovator with Chief Wayne Zigowitz from Littleton, Colorado. Wayne's researched and written extensively on the topic of EMS and fire personnel suicides and how they can be prevented. Can you do more to recognize the warning signs in your colleagues? Well, we'll find out how you can do that later on in the show after the news. Before we get to that, though, I do want to make sure you check out the links and additional information available for you over at the MedicCast blog at mediccast.com/blog. There's a show notes link at the top of the page. You can click that link and it'll take you right to the most recent episode. And of course, you can also scroll down there and find previous episodes as well. There's also a search box there for you on the right if you're looking for something in particular. But take some time and make sure you follow up on the information you get for each episode. Understand how it applies to your own EMS practice and protocols. If you want to get back in touch with me, you can certainly do so. Make sure you get in touch with me by email at podmedic@mac.com. You can email me your comments, your questions on the shows. Maybe you have a suggestion or an idea for interviews or topics. Either way, I want to get back to you and let you know that I heard from you, and I will do that. So keep those emails coming. Also, don't forget all you mobile device users out there, there is a MedicCast podcast app for you. It's free. It's in your device's store. Download it. Get the show directly to your device without having to go through other things to get there. That's it. Let's go ahead and get on into the rest of this week's show, coming up right now with the news. First up in the EMS news for EMTs and paramedics this week is a look at an article out of Michigan where one city is switching their paid fire department to volunteer status in order to pay their EMS providers more for the increased volume of calls they're receiving. Finally! Somebody noticed, apparently, that fire departments are top-heavy, overstaffed, bloated burdens to our municipalities that are supported by a misconception that they need a staffing level similar to that needed 100 years ago, before modern building codes and safety measures like smoke detectors and residential sprinkler systems. These things made fatal fires few and far between. So what we do need, though, is more EMS providers on the street to care for the increasing number of EMS calls. Some cities are citing the need to have firefighters respond to medical calls, but they do so in a million-dollar fire truck that gets 2 miles to the gallon with a crew of 4 people to assist the medics. Wouldn't it make more sense to send a paramedic or two in a chase car or even an additional ambulance? It would if you had the staff to do that. Now, we know that medical calls far outnumber the actual fire calls out there, if they don't count automatic alarms and rescue assists, so why don't we staff our public safety agencies accordingly? Fire department staffing models are a thing of the past and need to go the way of the dinosaur. Now, don't get me wrong, I'd love a job too where I sit around all days waiting for 3 or 4 calls to come in while I laugh at the medics who run their butts off and don't have time to pee between calls. I get it. But that's no way to run a public safety agency where people have to pay your salaries with their tax money. You can sit around at home and respond in when there's an actual call, like Well, volunteer systems do. That makes a whole lot more sense. So kudos to Charlevoix, Michigan for their initiative to do something that some of our nation's biggest cities are afraid to do. Next up in the EMS news, let's take a look at the paramedic ALS skill of intubation. You know, it's a contentious issue for many of us. There are docs and systems out there that cite research that we should have this skill taken away from us because we just aren't proficient at it. And there's some validity to that argument. Intubation isn't like riding a bike, folks. You don't get to intubate an airway head once a year and wave your hands in success to be keeping that skill proficient. Airway management is something that must be practiced, not learned once and known forever. I found an article over at emergencylife.com where they write about 10 tips for better, more successful intubation. The first item on the list is practice. The other items on the list make just as much sense. You have to ensure that intubation is really needed. You have to make sure that you have this skill and ready to go with all the equipment to go for the patient. You know, this is like starting too many IVs. Do we start too many intubation attempts? Maybe we do. We also need to prepare ourselves for the job and make sure we're ready to go when the time comes. You need to use good technique. You need to have the additional airway tools like a bougie stick. Do you know what that is? Well, good, but do you know how to use it? There are some other good tips in this article, so you should go ahead and check the whole article out. Follow the link in the show notes and let me know what you think. But good intubation technique and success, from my book, comes from practice, proficiency, and preparation. And if you haven't lined up those three P's, then you shouldn't complain when other health professionals question whether you're worthy of the skill in your protocol set. I'm just saying. Finally, in our news for EMTs and paramedics this week, let's take a look at an interesting article on asthma patient management over at healthday.com. They based this article on some recent research into asthma treatment effectiveness in patients over the age of 30. The researchers looked at over 1,000 patients with asthma to gauge the frequency of their standard asthma meds failing to control their disease process. And they found that older adults over the age of 30 showed treatment failures about 17% of the time, while pediatric patients only showed treatment failures about 10% of the time. Now, there may be something to concern that long-term asthma patients have some sort of decreased lung function over time, and as adults, they don't respond to the treatments as readily due to some of that anatomical or physiological damage. For us in EMS, this means that we should be more cautious in our handling of adult asthma patients and be prepared for symptoms to continue or even worsen during our treatment of them. The researchers were not sure what could be definitely causing this change in effectiveness over time, but they do say that the challenge is to recognize that it occurs and be prepared to manage these patients more aggressively when needed in order to help them over their asthma attacks. So I suggest you review your protocols. Maybe look into what are the secondary treatments in your system for asthma that might work better than first-line treatments. Talk to your medical directors about this article and share it with them. Maybe they have an opinion on it. Remember, patient care is a collaborative effort, and a good working relationship with your ER docs can go a long way to improving patient outcomes. This year, Chief Wayne Zigowitz from Littleton, Colorado, was recognized with an EMS 10 Innovator Award. He got the award for his significant research, training, and writing on suicide in EMS and fire services. We all need to expose and educate our fellow providers to the signs and symptoms of depression in patients and our own colleagues. So do you know what Wayne is talking about? Check out this segment I did with the Physiocontrol Podcast Studio at EMS Today 2015 earlier this year.
Hi, Chris Montero here at EMS Today 2015, and we're interviewing the EMS 10 winners sponsored by Physiocontrol and GEMS. So I'm here with Wayne Zigowitz. I was very honored to have Wayne and I sit down and have a little conversation about his EMS 10 award. Congratulations, first off.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks, right, and good evening to you.
Yes, so tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been in the fire service 33 years. So I've been a paramedic 27 years and a division chief with Littleton Fire Rescue in Littleton, Colorado.
Right. Before we start, I think it's really cool that after almost 7.5 years, 8 years that that they've been giving out the EMS 10 awards, Colorado, I mean, we've won a lot of awards.
We're on the top shelf.
I think it's awesome.
That's right. That's right.
So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So tell me why you won this award. What got you into that EMS 10 spot?
Well, let me back up a little and tell you how I got on the whole topic of suicide. I was in the Executive Fire Officer Program at the National Fire Academy, and one of the classes that I had to write a thesis for was Leading Community Risk Reduction. And so I was looking for a topic when one kind of came into my life. We had resuscitated a senior citizen from a carbon monoxide attempt, and almost 6 months to the day, he came back to our fire station 13, shot and killed himself on the steps of the firehouse.
Oh my gosh.
And I didn't know a lot about suicide in Colorado, so I started researching it, and it fit right in with my topic of community risk reduction. And I was a little shocked by what I found when I researched the fact that Colorado was the sixth in the nation for suicide. And in all of my career, I had been going on a lot of suicides, but I really never put the dots together. So once I started researching it, I found some shocking statistics about my state and about suicide in general. And I thought, these are preventable deaths, but this is a subject nobody likes to talk about. And I studied this and researched it for 6 months, and I really made it a kind of a goal of mine to talk about it as much as I could. And so I wrote a research paper on it. And in my research paper, I found a few niches. One is that you pick up a paramedic textbook, and there's 1.5 pages on suicide. Now, if this was some other topic other than a mental health issue, you'd probably see 10 or 15 pages on it. And so I found this little niche that firefighters, paramedics are not trained to deal with people who have either attempted their life or dealing with the families of people who have taken their life. So I developed a training program for firefighters, well, for everybody in EMS and public safety. I also wrote a standard operating procedure on what is expected of our people when they get there, because they've had no direction up to this point. Mm-hmm. And I also develop some resource brochures to leave with people at their homes in cases of completed suicide, or to leave with people who have attempted suicide.
And you're right. I think we as an industry don't want to talk about it. I think we as a society don't want to talk about it. And I think it's just kind of that thing that everybody just goes, ooh, he committed suicide or whatever, and nobody really has an understanding of why. Did you, in your research, did you dig into the reasons why, or what were some of your research pieces for that?
Well, first of all, most people don't know, maybe you do, that there is a national suicide strategy, prevention strategy. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Right. I've been in the service for 33 years. I never knew this existed. And one of the pieces in there, one of the strategies, is that it calls for the gatekeepers of society to be able to identify people who are high risk for suicide. Those gatekeepers are you and me, police, clergy, people who have interaction with the public on a regular basis. In all my time, I've never had any kind of education, so that's why I developed the training program. As far as why, there are surely a lot of factors that weigh into somebody's decision, and when you study and look at the research, what you find is that at the very end, people have thrown out all logical choices in their life, and they see this as their only way out of their pain that they feel, their mental health pain that they feel every single day. And at the end, what I read is that it's a very logical choice for people to take their life. Now, there's a lot of things that play into that. Mental health issues like depression, substance abuse is another thing, isolation. So there almost has to be a checklist that a provider would say, this person is really at high risk for taking their own life. lives. So I went out to try to do something about it in my community. I really had no idea that this paper was going to kind of go national, and I've heard from some people internationally. So anybody who wants my research, I'd be glad to send it to them.
Excellent. And what are the next steps? What do you see? You and I have been touched by suicide recently in Colorado. We've had now several providers in Colorado over the past year commit suicide, at least in our profession. Is this kind of the burden we have to bear for all the years of us going, hey, you know, just buck up and do the thing and push your emotions to the side? And is this something, I see it as something we should fix. I'm hoping that's something you see we should be fixing too.
In our profession, we're seeing a rising number of people who've taken their lives, not only while they're on the job, but also once they retire, they become isolated. Right. They tend to, in some cases, have substance abuse. These are all very preventable deaths. Depression is treatable. Substance abuse is treatable. But we don't like to talk about it. Society doesn't like to talk about it. The other thing I found when I talk to a lot of survivors and family members, what you say in those short moments that you're with them mm-hmm. is going to stay with them for their whole lives. They will remember what you said. And in many cases, we're not trained in order to know what to say. I like to call it the look. We all stand around with our hands in our pockets, not knowing what to say, or we say something that might be inappropriate. And we hopefully a victim's advocate will show up. In some cases they do, in some cases they don't. So it's very awkward for providers who are untrained to be able to interact at a very crucial time in someone's life.
After all of this, do you think giving us more education when we become right at the beginning, and you said it well. We have a page and a half in our paramedic textbook. More education, I think, is always the key to this kind of stuff. So how do we kind of bridge that gap? Where do we go as a paramedic profession to get us to that next level?
Well, we all have to talk about it, and we all have to, recognize the signs and symptoms that I outlined in my paper in our fellow brothers and sisters. My original research is really preventing it in the community, but in the last 5 years, of course, it's bled over to a lot of increase in suicide in our profession. So we have to be able to support our brothers and sisters. We have to be able to ask for help. We have to be able to identify in our brothers and sisters when they're going through a tough period in their lives. And then we got to be able to talk to them about it. Do you have the means and the method? We have to identify people who are really serious about it from those people who are also calling for help, but may not be quite on the edge. If you are with a lot of friends on Facebook, as an example, social media, if you look on Facebook, you see the ups and downs of your friends. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're writing that right on their Facebook page, and then we're ignoring that. So a lot of times that's a cry for help, and we have to be able to see that. And then we have to make it socially acceptable to be able to ask for help and not be stigmatized by the other people in our industry, because that's what society does to people with mental health issues.
Right.
So it's a very complex subject, as I found, and I'm very thrilled to get this award, but really it's about getting this topic out in the public to be able to confront this and face it and deal with it and come up with future strategies on how to deal with it.
Well, and I think you said it best right there, is that there has to be some personal responsibility, obviously, that we have to, as me as a provider, have to go, the demons I'm dealing with, whatever it is, I have to know it's okay to say. And you as a person have to be willing to receive that, to say, this sucks. Whatever it was, this sucks. And I think that then you have to be able to make the next step and say, I need help, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think we've seen all these other programs, but even something as simple as going to see a counselor can do a world of help for a lot of people. And it's just getting it out there.
Yeah.
It has, and it's a very safe place. And I think that's what we have to make people realize, is it's okay to talk about things in a safe place. And that's okay.
And also, I think some of the attention that we're seeing on the topic of suicide is coming from what we're seeing with our veterans and the post-traumatic stress that they've had. When you look at what firefighters and paramedics see on a regular basis, I mean, how could you expect someone to go home and not be affected by that?
Right.
We're not supermen. We're everyday people who have a very tough job in a very tough environment, and we need to continue to support our people and let them know that it's okay to ask for help and come up with strategies to be able to face this and deal with it. Let me talk briefly about one strategy out there, and I think it's something that you will see coming up, and that is resiliency training. To be able to give people the skills to deal with, to know what to do for themselves personally before they're actually involved in traumatic events. We brought in a team of resiliency trainers, and we trained some of our people right in the academy. And resiliency training comes out of the military. It's based on the data that they get from veterans, and it's proven that people who have resiliency training before they are involved in traumatic events do much better in the long run. So
excellent.
Resiliency training is, it's on the horizon. You're going to hear more about it, I guarantee you.
Excellent. Wayne, awesome. Congratulations once again. And tell me, finally, what does it mean to you that Physio Control has recognized, is starting to recognize us? You know, there's other award programs at the Eagles for physicians, things like that, but this is about us. So what does that mean to you, that there's somebody out there that's trying to recognize us for the great work we're doing?
Well, first of all, I think, you know, you've been in the business. It's awkward to receive awards. I think most people are going to tell you that's just what I'm paid to do, or I volunteer to do, and it's wonderful for Physio Control. They've been, you know, I look at some of the equipment here. I remember the LifePak 5 that I grew up with. They have always been kind of innovators themselves, and they're innovators for doing this and showing the good work that we're doing. And I'm humbled to be one of those people.
Well, great. Well, congratulations, sir, and thanks for coming up and sharing your story. I really appreciate
it. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it.
And thank you for joining us. For more information and more coverage, join us at emstoday.com or at theprobednetwork.com to watch more videos on the EMS 10 Awards. I'm Chris Montero, and thank you very much for joining us.
That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week, and of course, remind you to follow up on all of the information you get in this week's show over at the MedicCast blog. That's at mediccast.com/blog. Over there, you'll find a show notes link at the top of the page. Go ahead and take a moment and follow up on all of the information and links to news items and more you find there each week. You can also sign up for our email newsletter, and that'll bring you those links directly into your email inbox each week if you want. There's a form on the right-hand side of the page. Just go ahead and fill that out, and you can get the MedicCast newsletter for yourself. I also welcome your comments and suggestions by email. So if you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. Send in your ideas for news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I really do look forward to hearing from you, and I'll make sure I get back to you. I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media and some of the pages and sites out there, you can find me at most places under the handle Podmedic. So you can catch me over at Twitter at twitter.com/podmedic or Facebook at facebook.com/podmedic. Friend or follow me over there. Also, don't forget to check out our MedicCast Facebook page. We now have over 5,000 followers, so head over to facebook.com/mediccast. Click the like button on the top of the page and join the community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with your colleagues and students and friends in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, news items, tips, and more every Monday morning to start off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the MedicCast today. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors. And remember, folks, scene safety, BSI.